I really like Dan Siegel's work, and he works, his book for young children, for parents of young children, is called The Whole Brain Child. And that book is a very short, simple book full of lots of diagrams, full of lots of support for parents and educators around how to think of his emotional idea of regulating the brain in terms of how we provide guidance for children, how do we respond to certain emotional outbursts with children, how we support emotional self-regulation. And he talks about the right brain and the left brain. He talks about the upper brain, which is this decision-making, the cortex part, and how when we flipped our brain, our lid, we've moved down to the lower brain, back down to our emotions and our reflexes, and we're unable to regulate when we're in that portion of the brain. So it's called The Whole Brain Child, and it's probably worth picking it up. It's a little book that costs $15 or less, very easy to read. He also, for those of you who have any teenagers in your life, he does a lot of work with adolescent development as well. And my favorite book of his there is called Brainstorm. And he's written that book for both parents and adolescents to understand what's happening in their adolescent brains, because it's the second rapid period of development for children. And the brain is actually literally reorganizing itself during adolescent brain development. And that's why young people gravitate towards their peers and away from their parents, why they take risks, why they may be super moody, why they can't get up in the morning. All of those things are because there's a lot of reorganization in the brain. And we don't have time to go into that in this module. But as I say, if you have adolescents in your life, I would strongly recommend the book Brainstorm. All right, next slide, please, Lynn. So let's take a look at how a brain grows. So on the left, you see a picture of a brain cell or a neuron, and you see all those little things poking out of it. They're called dendrites. And that's not really necessary to know, other than when an infant is born, the infant will have billions with a B of these neurons in the brain. That's why infants' heads are so large when they're born, is that there are billions of these brain cells in their brains. Now, what this brain does, those dendrites reach out to other dendrites. So neurons are searching for connections with other neurons. And as I mentioned, the infant brain is only has connections that allow it to survive at birth. But immediately, that brain is starting to grow immediately after birth. And it will start to make up to 10,000 connections a second. The growth of an infant's brain is almost unimaginable. You can see on the right those connections and where those bright sparks are in the slide, or where the connections are made. And the connections aren't solid, like it's not tying a knot. It's actually a chemical connection, and those chemicals fire back and forth between the neurons. And that's one of the reasons that addictions are so prevalent, is because a lot of the drugs that are currently in use mimic the chemicals in the brain. And so the brain just absorbs those drugs as if they were other chemical connections. And that's the challenge with addictions, so easy to get into them and so hard to get out of them. Next slide, please. Probably one of my favorite slides, and yet it was taken, this slide was created way back in about 1956. So there on the left, you see the brain at birth. As I say, only what is absolutely necessary to keep the infant alive. And the reason that is so is because as soon as we became creatures who stood up and walked on two legs, our pelvises narrowed. And if we had any more connections in a baby's brain at birth, we physically would not be able to give birth to that baby. So this is an evolution design to allow us to be able to give birth to our baby. But look at year six. Look at the density there. So thinking that 10,000 1,000 connections a second. This six-year-old child now has trillions, trillion with a T, as many stars as there are in the Milky Way, as high as the U.S. national debt is another way of looking at it. Trillions of connections in the brain. The challenge with this brain is that it is so dense, so complex, and very disorganized. So all of you will know that if you're working with toddlers and you see a toddler run and you yell out, stop, the toddler takes several steps before even acknowledging, first of all, that she's heard you, and then another few steps before she's able to stop. Because she receives your message into this very complicated, disorganized brain, and the message is flying around trying to say, oh, that means stop. Where are my connections to my legs to actually do what I've been asked to do? And it takes a toddler a long time to be able to respond to that command. So what the brain does is to begin to organize itself and make itself more efficient. So you can see by age 14, there are many fewer connections in the brain. And that's because the brain's been going through a process called pruning, just like we might do in our garden, where we prune away the old raspberry canes that produced raspberries this year because they're not going to produce them next year. So we prune them away. So the brain begins a process of pruning. And the idea is that any connections that we made in those 6 years, the first 6 years that we don't use, the brain gets rid of. It's deadwood. We don't need them. And the connections that we do use actually become stronger, faster, more efficient. So that by the time we're 14 years old, that person should be able to stop within a millisecond, because the brain is far more efficient than it was as a six-year-old. There is a downside to pruning, and the downside is that it begins in the early years and it continues for the rest of our life. So when you get to be my age, and I'm in my middle 60s, when you get to be my age, you realize that you are actually losing your mind, because we truly are continuing to prune. What's the hopeful part of this is that we can continue to learn. We don't just lose connections in the later part of our life. We can actually continue to build neurons. And we do that through learning, through sitting in on webinars like this, to reading a book, to taking more workshops on early childhood education, on learning from our children, of learning from those around us. We can continue to learn and develop our brain, which is really important, because on the other side of it, our brain is pruning away things that we don't use. So a good example of this is that in the first 6 years of life, the brain is born not knowing what language it's going to hear. An infant doesn't know intuitively what language her parents are going to speak. So the brain is born with the potential to learn any language. The ability is there. And if the infant hears any number of languages, those connections will be built into the brain. And a child who learns more than one language in the first 6 years of life will be able to speak those languages without an accent. They'll sound like a native speaker, because in fact they are. But when people learn languages after about the age of six, it's often much more difficult to learn to speak that language without an accent, to sound like a native speaker. So when we start to learn languages in high school, we are way too late. We need to be introducing second and third languages very early in life. And we don't confuse children by doing that, because the brain has the potential to learn anything that we throw at it. It has amazing potential. Next slide, please. So here we're going to take a look, and so this is the next video, Lynn, just to cue you there. This next video is from Alberta Family Wellness Initiative, and it's going to review four metaphors, three that we're going to talk about today, and one of them, the metaphor on toxic stress, we'll see it in this video, but we won't talk about it until next webinar. Okay, Lynn.